All right, everybody, welcome to the very last official episode of the year. Gideon, how's it going this week?
Going good, dude. Just been playing a lot of Death Stranding, dude. I'm back in the saddle.
Yes, that is what I like to hear.
I've just been grinding out, like going super ham on all the snow missions. And like you said in when you were texting me, like total Kino. Like the fucking
Yeah.
music. I love having the all terrain like exoskeleton. I'm just like, God, I love Low Roar's music is so good in this.
Did you hit the song I was telling you about yet?
I don't know. Is that in the snowy
Yes,
area?
it is.
Okay, 'cause I'm in chapter 8 with Hartman and stuff, but I'm a
Okay.
little past that. Like I delivered that bomb to like the paleontologist or whatever the fuck,
All right.
and I got the oxygen mask for the like poison gas one and
Right.
stuff.
Use it exactly once and that's it.
Really? Just that one time?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, that's good to know. That's so funny. So yeah, I don't think I have experienced that. Was it Patience, right? I think it's called.
It's called Patience. I think it's like one of the last missions of the snow area that you hear that song for the first, dude, like the two song moments that I remember from the original game is coming up over the mountain into Lake Knot. And like over the cliff, and then "A Silence for the Feeling" starts playing, and you like run down the hill into Lake Knot City.
So good.
That one was incredible, and then the one that I'm talking about, like I had like tears in my eyes when that song was playing, and I was like running up to the final, the base to deliver whatever it was. But that one like blew me away. So I'm so glad you're back into it and enjoying it.
I fucking love it. It's one of the coolest games I've ever played, and it just like it's one of those games that is doing a lot for me, like kind of emotionally, and I'm just like connecting with it a lot, and it's just like a special time and place game for me. And
Yeah,
it's
for
like,
sure.
I was really into all the pre-release stuff, like watching it before it came out, but then I just like never had a chance to properly play it. And so it has like this like almost like weird sense of nostalgia where I never really played it, but I remember all those memories of like looking forward to it, and
Right.
it feels like it's finally paying off. I think one of my favorite songs that they do is the I'm Leaving song,
Okay.
and by Low Roar. I'll send it to you later, but I love that. I don't remember when it was exactly.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm glad you're finally getting into it. I'm glad that somebody else like in my life is playing it so that I don't feel insane about being like, dude, this game about walking is the shit, man. You know, like
And then, dude, it's so good. It's just, I get it's not for everybody, but man, I'm just eating it up right now. Other than that, I've been grinding out a lot of Arc Raiders. I'm level like 21, 22
Nice,
now.
nice.
Having a lot of fun. I killed my first matriarch, which is crazy. It was like the whole lobby just attacking this huge spider robot.
Nice.
So that was sweet.
I didn't realize you're such a men's rights
Yeah, I'm very, was it red pilled or
advocate.
whatever?
Yeah.
And another good news on the gaming front, the library, local library, they have the Metal Gear Solid like Master Collection
Yeah,
on
dog.
PS5. So I got that in hand now, dude. So I can just rent that whenever, but I'm renting it right now. I'm just focusing on Death Stranding, though.
Yeah, finish up Death Stranding while you still got the momentum. You're like 80% of the way done with Death Stranding, so
Yeah, I think they said I'm on kind of like the last leg of connecting America. So I'm like, I
yes.
gotta be so close.
Once you do that last connection, it's mostly like,
Big
you know,
cutscene stuff.
cutscenes and boss fights until the end game. You know, it's after that, you know, all the legwork, you know, literally and metaphorically is pretty much done. So,
Hell
yeah,
yeah.
you're in the final throw. It makes me a little, I mean, you probably feel to some degree, you probably wish you did it all in one go instead of splitting it up so much.
Right. To a degree, like sometimes I don't mind taking these like breaks from games like that, and I don't feel like I've like forgotten a lot of it, which is good. But yeah, I mean, it's just a treat. Like I've been really really enjoying it.
Awesome. Well, then you'll have the second one to pop into, and that's a pretty new game. So you'll be all caught up, and of course, then you can go back and you can look at Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3. So those are all-time classics too. So yeah, excited for you to finally get into the Kojima verse.
Yeah, for real.
Neil and my friendship really blossomed over our shared love of Metal Gear Solid 3. So
Hell yeah.
it's been a key touchstone for everybody around us.
Love it.
I mentioned
Awesome.
it in my wedding speech for Sam.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think I saw my mom roll her eyes and go, "Oh, Jesus, here we go with the fucking video games."
There we go.
Awesome. Well, Neil, I already heard from you. You said you're in Dayton, Ohio.
Yep. Started a new job. Flew out on Monday and been going through training the past couple days. And yeah, it's been interesting. And having to be on somebody else's schedule other than mine, it's been a change of pace. But
That's good for you.
it's good to be back in the saddle too.
Good deal, dude.
Yeah, good. And like every coworker's good so far and things like that.
I've got a training group of 16 other people. I don't think I'll be working with them much. They seem to be all East Coast, and I'm gonna be working West Coast. But yeah, they're nice enough people, and the training people are nice. It's a pretty cool campus here. They've got like a cafeteria on site that's like on par with like the UNI dining hall. So
Okay.
that's been a
Nice.
blast from the past. Did
Now, if you were sizing up your coworkers, could you beat them up? Do you think? Like
there's
if there's an octagon sort of style tournament, you're coming out on top, right?
I'm in a weird spot where there's four or five guys who are older and they're taking on a more senior position because they've been in like the industry longer. Not threatened by any of them. But then and then there's five or six girls, and then there's a bunch of guys that are all like, or for the most part, like recent college grads. So I think they might be able to outlast me in stamina. There's a couple of wiry guys, but I think if I closed fast and just really started laying in, I think I could take them.
Okay, that's good to know. Always good to know you can take your coworkers. All right. Geez, what have I been up to this week? I finally finished Hades 2 after like 40, 45 hours of grinding away at that. I really enjoyed it. I wrote my thoughts on a Medium post, basically where I just said, this is a great game, but it's very much just a sequel to Hades. It's like an old PS2 sequel where it's a new story and things are slightly improved. But it's not like a revolutionary sequel. It is just a classic. We made things slightly better, and we kind of did the same thing over again, kind of sequel. And there's been a lot of those this year. But it was still really fun. Still unimpeachable from a gameplay perspective. And obviously, I really enjoyed it. I put 45 hours in within like a month. So really spent a lot of time playing Hades. Just got back from a bowling event at work. Just started a new job. I got my new work laptop today, which is thankfully silver instead of black, so it doesn't get fingerprints all over it. I specially requested that, and they totally followed through, so that was very kind of them. Let's see what else has been going on this week. I've got to host a Christmas on Saturday. I've got a gig Saturday night. I just had band practice yesterday night, so I have been very busy. I have not had any time to like sit down and kind of just enjoy anything this week except for we watched Art of Heat on geez, what was it? Probably Saturday night, and then we finished it up Monday night. Or maybe it was like Sunday and Monday, but we did the first 2 hours and then the last hour. So wait a minute, who brought this? Gideon, did you bring this?
Yep.
Okay, so why'd you want to bring Heat specifically?
So I know it wasn't super serious of De Niro December, but I just kind of on a whim glanced at like what other movies of his that I hadn't seen, and Heat was one I had always kind of heard about, but never seen. And I knew like I think GTA 5 has like a heist that references one of the ones they do in this movie. I'm a really big action fan, so I just wanted to check it out. It's just been like a blind spot of mine for like ages. And so I was just like always very curious about it, but I really didn't know much about it. So like plot wise, I don't think I had much spoiled at all. And we'll mention it probably later, but I know there was like a painting, I think, that kind of inspires like one of the shots in the movie that I thought was really cool. Like I saw that online. So, yeah.
All right, and Neil, you said you'd seen this movie before?
Yeah, I saw this a couple of years ago. Just like a random movie night kind of thing.
Just with you, but just solo?
No, my old friend Jamie and I watched it together.
Okay. And let's see here. Yeah, this is this. I had heard about this movie. I knew that this movie was Michael Mann, even though I haven't seen anything else by him. So I don't know why that's my point of reference with it. But
Well, no relation to Alfred Mann and his Earth Band.
right, or Manfred Mann, I think, is who you're talking about.
Yeah, my bad.
Yeah.
Botched the joke. Start the episode over.
That's okay. It's okay. It's okay. Let's see here. I had never I had never seen this before. I had only just heard about it in passing, and everybody, there's like a lot of jokes. I don't remember the comedian, but some comedian a long time ago said like every time I see the movie Heat, I just want to do a B&E with the boys. I just want to just like commit a crime and be like, where's the band? That kind of shit. And it did kind of make me want to play Payday a little bit. So I totally understand that. And I knew that other movies referenced it, right? I knew that like the opening of The Dark Knight is taken basically directly from Heat, including the actor. By the way, we got to get around to this movie has every actor who's ever been in another movie in it, and even some people who aren't actors, like Henry Rollins is randomly in this movie for like 15 seconds. So that was pretty interesting. But yeah, I'd never seen it before. I just heard of it. I knew it was De Niro and Pacino, and I knew it was this crime thing that was kind of related to like GTA 5 a little bit. But I was otherwise totally unfamiliar. So let me just kind of give my 10,000 foot thoughts, and then we can kind of get more into it and start moving along here. I thought Heat was really good. And normally, like long movies are a big turnoff for me. I thought Heat mostly earned its runtime. I think it probably could have been cut by maybe like 20 or 30 minutes, but like not too much, like still within the 2 hours and some change mark, and I would have been like totally comfortable. The action is so electric, and Pacino's performance in particular is so phenomenal. Like Pacino is like unreal good in this movie. I think De Niro is also good, but his character is so much more calm and put together that his performance is a little bit more subtle. That being said, I think the side plot with is it Edie is her name? I think the romance between De Niro and Edie doesn't really work for me, and I found myself like tuning out during a lot of those during a lot of those scenes. And I also think like the Natalie Portman stuff could have also been cut because I wasn't really sure what the point of the Natalie Portman stuff was. So like, I think there's like a little fat to be trimmed on this. That said, there are so many just excellent scenes, and it's just a great, compelling, realistic, intense thriller of an action movie. And a great cast, obviously, all around. So still really enjoyed it. How about you, Neil?
Yeah, I agree that overall this movie earns its 3 hour runtime, but I as I was watching it, I think certain things are underdone, particularly the Natalie Portman part. So she plays Al Pacino's stepdaughter, whose father is like a no-show parent, and her mom's like a psychiatrist who's always trying to analyze Pacino, and he won't let her. But as I was watching it, I kept thinking to myself that like in today's world, this would be like a prestige television show, like a six episode like Chernobyl type thing. And then it turns out that it was originally envisioned as like a short TV serial, and then was made into a made for TV movie in like the 80s before they finally remade it in the 90s with like an actual budget.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Gideon, how about you? What was your reaction?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty expertly made. I thought the movie looked incredibly modern in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the diverse cast and the kind of varied backstories of everybody, and just kind of
what do you mean the diverse cast? I'm just curious what you mean.
I mean, just like how, you know, you get this like cat and mouse with like Al Pacino and Robert De Niro and like De Niro's crew, and then there's stuff like, you know, the like neo-Nazi guy who, you know, this movie, like one thing I noticed is like all it takes is one person to mess up one thing and it can fuck up the whole thing for everybody. And it happens on like both sides, where like the neo-Nazi guy, he like freaks out, kills one of the armored car guards, and that like makes everything worse. And then when Pacino and his guys are like staking out Robert De Niro and that crew, and they're like, I don't know what they're doing exactly, but they're breaking into that building, and that guy like slumps over in the car or van or whatever, and they like he hears them. But like the cast with, you know, just not just the actors, but also like, you know, Val Kilmer, and you hear about like he's got a gambling problem and he really cares for his wife and kid, but he's, you know, he's got plenty of problems with that. I actually didn't mind the Natalie Portman stuff. Like, I know where you guys are coming from, but I feel like with that, it's almost like, you know, she's just kind of ignored the whole movie, and I feel like that's kind of the point. It's like such a shock to Al Pacino. He's not the father, obviously, but it's like, where did this come from? It's like everyone's getting blindsided in different facets of life and different things. And it's like, it almost made sense that she's like not really shown that much, or we don't really know what's going on, because it's not like the focus of the movie. But it's like, obviously, she's dealing with a lot of her own like demons.
I just wanted to interject and say, like, I don't dislike the Natalie Portman stuff. I do think mm-hmm. it is still like underdeveloped, and I get where you're coming from with mm-hmm. like her being overshadowed by her mom's obsession with Pacino.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think like they could have snuck in like a few more bits to show that like
yeah.
she and Pacino are closer than the first scene of the movie, basically.
Yeah. No, I definitely feel that. Yeah, I mean, I just loved being able to get so many different glimpses into all of these different characters. Even the guy who becomes like the replacement getaway driver, who ends up getting
the
killed.
The Alt-Day guy?
Oh, yeah, that's who he is. I was like, where are we seeing yeah. this guy? That's so funny. Oh, my God. It was just cool. It was like this really rich tapestry of, you know, cat and mouse, cops versus robbers, the two sides of the same coin, just like this crime world. And it was just like a really interesting movie, and I could see why people liked it so much. And yeah, it's got the high octane thrills of the action and the heist and everything. It has a lot of good drama. I did like the romance a bit more with Robert De Niro and Edie, but it was kind of losing me a little bit more towards the end of that tale. It's like, you should just dip, lady. But it's, I kind of got where like De Niro was coming from with just like, you know, he's not lonely per se, but it's like, who are you trying to fool, like her or yourself, you know? Right. So I don't know, I'm glad I checked it off the list. And I agree, I feel like they could have probably trimmed off like 20 minutes or made certain things like tighter. But on the whole, I do think it earned its runtime, and it was just a really interesting movie to finally check out. Yeah.
Did either of you think that Robert De Niro's daughter, I should just say Natalie Portman, Al Pacino's daughter, Natalie Portman, was going to be like her biological father was going to be one of the criminals.
No. No.
Okay. That was like, because in the beginning of the movie, there, you know, Pacino's constantly like, oh, you know, when's your real dad picking you up? That guy like never shows up. He's such a scumbag. And they keep alluding to the fact that like there's this other guy, like they're gonna show him, and then it's gonna be a big surprise who it is. So I was convinced that that was gonna be a kind of a Spider-Man Homecoming style twist, to pardon the comparison there. Okay. Well, I'm the only person who thought that. Okay. So
It
that's
seemed like he was
interesting.
like out of town, so that's why I didn't think that.
Yeah, I just thought that they were going to make more of that. Like, I guess that is kind of like overall my problem. Like, and by problem, I mean like this is a great movie, but if I had to have a nitpick, it's that like the screenplay is not as tight as it could be. And so like I was just surprised that they never went anywhere with that. Just like I was surprised when she had like slit her wrist at the end of the movie, and I was like, what the fuck does this have to do with the movie, other than showing that like, you know, Pacino is distracted from his family life and isn't paying enough attention to his wife and his daughter, obviously.
Well, not even just Pacino too, but his wife, you know, it's like
Right.
the wife is so like hung up on not, which this was like a big gripe for me, is like she kept being annoyed at that it's like he's a detective, dude. Like he has to be on call. He has to deal with all these crimes and stuff. Like I was like, didn't you know what you were getting into with this? Like I was like a little less sympathetic for her character, and I thought she was just being a bit ridiculous at times. But
I'm gonna accuse Michael Mann of not necessarily writing the best female characters, because I think they're definitely the worst part of this movie. I think that they do serve some like, you know, important aspects of like, you know, like Pacino's wife being annoying is what lets us let it lets him monologue, but like she's insufferable. I'm like, I wouldn't want to. It's like don't date the psychology major in college, guys. It's not worth it.
and I mean, I can like almost sympathize a little bit with just like, I get that would be very difficult being in that kind of a relationship and marriage with someone that has such an intense and demanding job, and at the drop of the hat they'd have to like leave for who knows how long, and you know it's a dangerous line of work and all this other stuff. But just the way she was like going about it was like really annoying to me. But yeah, I see what you mean, Neil.
Well, and that's the larger, I think, theme of this movie, right? Is that, I mean, this is no secret. This isn't doesn't make me smart for noticing it, but they're trying to draw a comparison between Pacino and De Niro and say like, hey, these two guys are way more similar than they are different. Like they're both married to their career, and just like, I mean, De Niro is always saying throughout the movie, hey, you know, I can't be doing anything in my life that I can't just drop and run away from. And although Pacino does not have a similar code that he keeps repeating, it's obvious that the same thing exists and applies in his life, which is what makes the I mean, would we all agree that the best scene in the movie is when Pacino and De Niro finally get in the coffee shop together?
I don't know if it's the best.
Yeah,
It's
I
up
think that's
there.
probably dramatically the best scene. Yeah.
Yeah, it's up there.
I thought it was really interesting and cool just seeing those two characters finally be able to meet and talk. But I also thought it was like strange that either would even like agree to do that, you know? But I do like the payoff it has, where it's like because they meet the rest of De Niro's crew is like getting rid of all their like trackers or whatever that they have. And it I love seeing them keep like one upping the other side.
Yeah, sort of a prestige kind of relationship between the two of them.
I think that the best scene for me is when they're, you know, shooting all the cops and running with the money, and it's like
Yes,
GTA
I
five
totally agree.
online. Like,
The bank scene in the middle of the movie was incredible.
yeah.
Neil, I mean, is that where you're at for favorite scene?
I mean, I think that scene is really great. But honestly, I do really love the opening sequence of pulling off the armored car
Yeah.
heist. Although it does also raise one of my gripes about the movie. So De Niro runs this like really tight crew of him, Val Kilmer, Danny Trejo, and a fourth guy whose name I forget.
Five more.
But they bring in this random fifth guy to help them with this heist. And the Wayne Grow, who fucks everything up. But the whole time I'm just saying, like, they didn't need this guy. Like, they're bringing in this wild card that they don't need. Like at no point is he necessary to the heist. Like, he's not the demolitions expert. He's not the driver. He just like gets in the car and is a fifth guy with a gun for them. And you know, like if he hadn't been there, like we wouldn't have a plot to the movie because the heist would have gone off without a hitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's one of those things. It's like, yeah, they could have fixed this, but then there'd be no movie. I thought everybody in the crew was cool. It was good to see. Speaking of cameos, I mean, it was cool to see Tom Sizemore show up. It was cool to see Danny Trejo show up. The Allstate guy. Who else is in this movie? John Voight is in this movie for like 10-15 minutes. It's always good seeing him show up. God, I feel like there's. Oh yeah, and then Henry Rollins shows up as he's like the guard for the guy who owns the bank, who is also the guy that owns the bank in the beginning of The Dark Knight. I don't know if you guys caught that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was cool to see him show up. So, yeah, tons of recognizable, familiar faces in this.
William Fichtner.
Right, I don't know what else he's been in, but I only recognize him from the beginning of the Dark
Knight. He's like a really common supporting actor, like a really like A list of supporting actors. He's never the lead, but you know, I think sadly, the first thing I remember seeing him in was the Adam Sandler remake of The Longest Yard. He plays the guard captain.
Well, maybe we'll do Adam Sandler April Neil if that'll be cool. We'll do Duncan Chino, dude. It'll be good. Something I wanted to talk about, like, you know, if this is my topic of the week, I just wanted to bring it up. Is there any actor in Hollywood who swears better than Al Pacino? Because I have a real hard time.
It's hard to think of anybody off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Like maybe Samuel Jackson. I mean, that's kind of he's kind of up there. But dude, I laughed. So I knew it was coming, but like when he's like, she's got a great ass, I just fucking lost my mind. It's such a great line.
So funny. He's wild.
Yeah. Wait, who's the actor that he's yelling that at? It's not. I keep wanting to call him Hank Azaria. Hank. That's the voice actor from.
Is that not who it is? Hank Azaria? That's what it looks like.
Yeah, it is Hank Azaria.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it is Hank Azaria, I think.
Wait, does Hank Azaria also do like a bunch of voices on The Simpsons?
Probably.
God.
It looks like it, yeah.
I don't watch The Simpsons and. Yeah, same guy apparently.
I thought it was two different people.
Well, now you know. Other candidates for best swearer in Hollywood.
Samuel L. Jackson's a good one.
Nick Cage sometimes.
Sometimes. I think of like the common Hollywood actors. It's probably Pacino. There are a couple guys in movies you guys probably haven't seen yet but they come from across the pond. They swear different in Britain.
Like who are you talking, like Guy Ritchie movies?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we got to do a Guy Ritchie deep dive. I don't think I've ever seen anything by him. Where does this movie rank in your guys' kind of crime movies listing?
I don't know. I think it's pretty up there for me. I don't know if it's like super rewatchable for me. Like, I feel like I'd have to wait a couple years before I
Yeah, I
revisit
wouldn't
it.
watch this again like right away. I liked it, but it was too like drawn out for me to be like, man, I want to watch that like again tomorrow.
Well, I feel like part of it too is like part of the punch is like the plot and seeing what's going to happen. And so once I know, it's like almost a little less exciting.
Yeah. I all the air is out of the balloon once De Niro gets shot at the end of this movie. I was like, okay, it's over.
But
I mean,
I mean, I think it's a total classic. I really enjoyed it, and I could see why it's like so revered. I'm glad I was able to finally get around to it. Yeah.
Neil, what were you gonna
yeah,
say?
I was gonna say I like that it's a crime movie where, like, they don't over explain everything about like the heist, but like they also keep it on like a believable level. It's not a Ocean's 11 where it literally doesn't make sense and the director knows that it doesn't make sense. Like, they put some thought into, okay, this is how you would pull off a complicated but also low technology heist. Like, okay, we've got the guy who can pick up explosives. He has to drive all the way to Arizona to do it, but that's what he's gonna do. And you don't have like some guy doing backflips off the walls to get past the laser sensors or whatever. And then
He gets
I
cut
think
in
it
half
also
by
I think
the
it sets the
lasers.
tone really well early, where Wangro, tweaks out and kills a guard, and then the rest of the crew kills the other two guards because like it's analyzed that like at that point, like, there's no point in keeping them alive. That, we established pretty early on that, like, De Niro and his guys are bad guys. Like, we can like them and admire them on some level, but they also murdered two guys that they didn't have to just to cover their tracks.
Yeah, I respected that about De Niro's character in this movie. Like, the movie wasn't afraid to make him into a villain that was really a villain. You know, he wasn't a, they weren't afraid to have him cover his tracks and like just blow away Wayne Grow or like finish off Danny Trejo, which, you know, you could argue is moral, but when he showed up at the Dark Knight banker's house and just shot him through the window, like, you know, I respect that they were willing to like make De Niro into a bastard. You know, it was a cool character, and although he's not as interesting as Pacino, it was still, like I was thinking about this earlier this week. I've played a lot of games this year where it was ostensibly a revenge story, and then the character pusses out at the very end. It doesn't get revenge, and they turn it into like, oh, we're gonna reform them instead. And I'm just like, ah, oh, come on. Like, I wanted to see the blood. And in this movie, you get the blood. You know, they don't cheap out on anything like that at the end. And I respect the ability to kind of like commit to that sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know. I would say like best crime movie. You know, it's certainly like up there. Not that I've seen that movie. I guess it depends on like what your definition of a crime movie is. Like, is Taxi Driver a crime movie? Like, kind of, but not. Like a
Right.
heist movie, you know. I would say, like, is The Dark Knight a crime movie? Like, The Dark Knight is more of a crime movie than fucking Taxi Driver, but you know, I don't like this as much as I like The Dark Knight. I don't like it as much as I like maybe like Goodfellas. Is The Godfather a crime movie? Like, almost by definition, but
I would say
I don't
it
know.
is.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of a large category, but this is certainly like I would say in like the B tier of crime movies for me personally.
Fargo. I mean, that's really up there for me.
Oh yeah, you know
Love
what? You're
Fargo.
right. That's How about you, Neil?
I mean, now that we're like expanding the definition of a crime movie, that brings in Martin McDonagh for me, so yeah,
Oh yeah.
it drops pretty far for that categorization.
What's your favorite Marty McDonough? Just in Bruges?
The Guard.
The Guard.
Okay. Don't think we've done that one.
Yeah, at some point I'll bring the Guard because I love it so much, but I did want to ease you guys into the Irishness with First we did Seven Psychopaths, and then we did In Bruges, and maybe we'll get to the Guard soon.
I loved In Bruges. Actually, like, I liked it the first time we watched it, and I liked it even more the second time. It's like, and I almost never feel that way about a movie. I always feel like my initial impression is like pretty hard to change, but definitely In Bruges has grown on me over time. What else do we want to pull out with Heat here? I've tried to pull out a few topics. I don't say you guys aren't biting, but you're not overly into talking about them. So what else do we want to pull out here? Any standout performances or scenes that we haven't talked about yet?
I mean, I really liked the kind of subtle performance of De Niro and like his relationship with Edie, and how it's like, you know, he kind of seems like he can make everything right with money, and he's like very suave and everything like that, and it's like going well. And then he kind of has this moment where like he's at the dinner with his friends, and he sees them all with like their ladies and their families and stuff, and it's like you can see he feels that like pain of like longing or like just loneliness. And then he's kind of like foot on the gas pedal, like, yeah, let's just go leave, let's go to New Zealand, you know, don't worry about your job, I'll get you all set up, da da da. And it's almost like too much too quick. And then just kind of seeing it all unravel after the shit show of the bank heist, and she kind of like realizes like, oh, this guy's a fucking murderer, like a horrible murderer who steals and kills people and does all these horrible things. And just even seeing like how she pulls away from him and stuff, I like the kind of like tragic heartbreak of that. And even like how he has to live by his code at the end, and he's like looking at her, and he has to just like dip when she's in the car. Yeah. And even how it's like he felt compelled, like he was totally in the clear, and he could have just like gone with her, you know, doubtful they would have lasted or anything. But John Voight said that they were in the clear, good to go. And then he's like, I gotta kill that. Was it Wayne Bro, right? Or Wayne Grow guy? Yeah.
What was your guys' understanding of what John Voight's role in the process? Like, what does he do for the crew?
He's a fence. So, you know, he takes stolen goods and he sells them to, you know, like slightly more legitimate buyers.
I see.
And like, you know, he's saying like, you know, he stole these bear bonds from the armored car. They're worth $1.5 million. I'm going to sell them for 40 cents on the dollar, and that's your take.
Okay, that makes a little bit more sense. Yeah, it seemed like he was either buying things from the crew. I knew that bit, and it seems like maybe he was like selling things to the crew, like there he was like connecting them with other services, like the tech guy, things like that.
He's like the gray market, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was a real kind of an interesting cat and perfectly cast. I can't think of anybody in this movie that like I didn't think was like well cast in their particular role. Like even like, you know, Pacino is so much more built to have a really expressive, fiery, kind of out of control personality role than De Niro is. De Niro is so much better at like a subtle kind of tells you a lot just by like a small facial expression kind of deal. I would say it's also a joy to watch a movie that is essentially about people who are really competent at whatever they're doing. That's just always like a fun character to watch. Like watching De Niro and his crew like meet in the freight yard just to get the cops to come there so that then they can spot the cops from on top of the building. Like that was a really great twist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved all that the one-upping that they kept doing to each mm-hmm. other, and he's like, oh, we just got made, you know. I love that stuff. That was really,
you know, the two things in this movie, the two scenes that stand out to me as being like made me like so emotional, and then we got to get to talk about the ending, which I think is like I'm a little bit more, I don't want to say negative on, but Actually, I'll just say it now. I think the last scene of this movie, the airport chase, is... Do you guys think this scene was like a little too drawn out? Like, were you guys like... I was starting to kind of space out by the end of... Like, I would like randomly come back into it and be like, oh yeah, I'm still watching this movie and they're still chasing each other and they're still like hiding from each other in the shadows of the airport.
I think there's definitely an issue of watching this post 9/11 where it's like, oh, he's going to like... These two guys are just going to run onto the tarmac and yeah. The freaking passenger plane is taxiing near them. Mm-hmm. One of them's clearly armed and like nobody's going to stop them. It was like, for me, that actually took me out a little bit. It's like, I know this is made in the early 90s, but there's no way they got this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't think it was too drawn out personally. I liked it how it kind of had almost like this sense of dread and just like there's nowhere to go. And also the thematic of like the coming and going of all these people in the planes. And it could be, you know, a metaphor for like, you know, how he'll drop anything in 30 seconds and leave, or all the people that have gotten killed and different things like that. And even like the light and dark with like the shadows and like, you know, you could say good versus evil or cop versus robber, whatever. I thought that was pretty cool. And even the quiet and loud with the airplane engines and stuff, you know, just like almost like holding your breath while they're like hunting for the other one. I don't know. I thought
who did you want to survive, Gideon? And who did you think was going to survive?
That was tough. Ultimately, I was like, I hope De Niro can get away, but I don't think he will. I was like, I think he's cooked. I think it's like, I think he knew he was toast when he saw Edie in the car coming back, and he's like, I gotta fucking just leave. I can't implicate her. Like, why'd I even do this kind of thing? I really wanted him to make it out, but even it's like, you know, he would have never. I feel like he probably would have been with Edie for like a week or two, it feels like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that they don't hold back on him being such a bastard, and you still root for him, you still want to see him get out of it at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, says something to the power of the writing, the power of the performance. So
one other quick sidebar I wanted to mention, I almost forgot about. I liked how Val Kilmer's wife, like, obviously she was pretty sick of him and his shit, but she still was, like, on his side enough to give him that subtle, like, you gotta slide, you gotta, like, get out of here, you're totally made, they're gonna get you. And I thought that was really cool. And again, with the one-upping, I was like, oh, paper's good, he's Joe Schmo, he's in the clear, you know?
Yeah. Two scenes I wanted to mention that made me not like super emotional, but like really were getting to me was watching the Allstate guy like trying to turn his life around and then throwing it all away just to die in the shootout of the car crash was like totally heartbreaking.
Especially when you see his like wife or whoever.
Yeah, like, that TV. That was hard. And when they find the dead body in the parking lot. And like Pacino's like trying to get the relative to like not go over to their dead kid. That was another tough one. The actors in that scene just did a tremendous job, and it's very affecting. It's just such a sprawling kind of movie that hits so many different characters and things like that. They did a wonderful job. Well, guys, I feel the energy dying down a little bit, so I'd say speak now or forever hold your peace on other stuff that you might want to mention.
Yeah, I just want to come back around to what I said originally, where this like was meant, like was originally written as like as like the pilot to a TV series. I think that like for all the run time that it has, it's in that awkward spot where like we could either get like two more hours, three more hours of content, if again like we were making like a prestige television show. Or it needs to be cut down by an hour. And it just falls into this like weird spot where like, you know, we spent a lot of time with Pacino's crew or with De Niro's crew. I think like we're also supposed to get like a similar vibe between Pacino and like his group of cops, but because and then like half of them get wiped out during the bank scene. And I think we're supposed to feel more, but we didn't have enough time to get to know them because we've been focusing so much on De Niro. I just think that ultimately, like it's either too long or it's too short, and it's falling into this weird like teenage puberty, like you're not quite a man, you're not quite a kid zone of like not fully formed or too or just too long.
Yeah, it's like a joke from I just played a game called Thank Goodness You're Here, which is based on British humor. And there's a company that makes a product that's a half breed between a bean and a pea, and they're called Peens. And the tagline is not quite beans and not quite peas, the Peens. And that's kind of how this movie is. You're right. It's like not it's simultaneously like a little too long and also not nearly long enough to expound on all the stuff that you want to know about. Yeah, I think you totally hit the nail on the head there. Gideon, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I feel like I have one small thing I wanted to mention. So, for the most part, I thought this movie was really just beautiful and modern looking, and I love the kind of melancholy dreariness of just like it's weary. Even though Pacino's like really jazzed and like all about his work and he's like married to it, it's still like he's just dealing with so much heavy stuff. And De Niro is like, oh, let's just go, let's get away. It's like with wanting to escape this kind of crazy world and life that they live. And I appreciate that kind of tone and some of the like lines that they have, like you've heard like quoted a lot. And I like how this movie kind of resonates with a lot of people. But in terms of just like one very minor gripe, but it took me out when I was watching it. I think the movie looks so surprisingly modern and beautiful and everything, but there is a scene I think early on with De Niro and Edie, and I think he's at her place or she's at his, I forget which. And you can see it's like clearly like a green screen or something, and the fake like LA skyline is behind them, and it just looks so like weird. It just like totally took me
I
out.
didn't notice that, but I gotta go back and look at that for sure.
It's just like right there. So, but yeah, I mean, I liked, I just, yeah, I really appreciated just like this tapestry and this like world and just like everything that's going on and all these different things. And I like how it shows, yeah, like I mentioned earlier, one person can screw it up for everybody and it can just cascade into all these other things happening. So, I don't know, it's cool. It's definitely like a dad core movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I definitely feel you guys were like, I don't know exactly what I would cut from it. I think it could be at least like 20 minutes less, or longer. Like Neil said, maybe there is a director's cut, I don't really know. But yeah, I don't know. I'm glad I brought it to the pod
Oh
and could
yeah,
check it out with you
absolutely.
guys. And I think it's cool that it was able to, like Neil had said, be remade from that TV movie and do it with actual budget. And it clearly like paid
Well,
off, it seems like.
for the record, Grace absolutely loved this movie, so
Nice.
we had a great time.
Nice. That's good
She
to
was
hear.
hella she was hella into this. We got popcorn, and then she
Had she
Grace
seen it
insists
before?
on eat she had never seen it before. Grace insists on chewing on the popcorn kernels after the good popcorn is already done, and then was very upset yesterday because she's had like tooth problems in the past, so she like made an emergency dentist appointment today to like check out this tooth pain she was having, and she got in there within 2 seconds. They're like, "Have you been eating a lot of popcorn?" So they found the root of the problem pretty quickly. So it's like maybe let's not chew on the popcorn kernels anymore.
Damn.
Oh shit, what was I gonna say? Oh yeah. Shout out to the line, "Fella, you can ball my wife, but don't you dare watch my television set." Totally awesome. Such a true detective kind of a, I like mowing my lawn kind of a line there. That was so awesome. That's like one of the most quotable lines from this whole movie. So that was good. And so let's do scores. I think I'm gonna give it a 4. You know, it's like, it was great, really liked it. Somewhere between, I'm gonna say like between a 3 and a 4 for me. Like 4 was like low end of 4, I'd say. Really, really enjoyed it. It was long but earned, mostly. It's runtime, solid performances, good on a technical level, just hard. And it was fun to watch with Grace, because she was obviously like so into it, and she was so concerned the whole movie that like Robert De Niro was gonna get shot like at every turn.
Fucking blasted.
Yeah, so and nobody dies a peaceful death in Heat. Everybody, it's like five tap to the chest and then a headshot. So
yeah,
it's pretty rough. Yeah, I'd say that's probably where I land at it. Although I don't know. I still feel like I'm digesting it a little bit. So Neil, how about you?
I'm gonna come down on a 3. I just think that like there's a lot of like really good stuff to be mined here, and like I don't want to advocate for making it shorter. I really do like. Personally, like the idea of like this being made into some kind of like prestige miniseries. I think it could have been really great in that capacity. You know, I think that there's just like there would have been room to grow, and also like time to breathe on like a 45-minute to an hour long episode and make 6-8 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, like certain characters I think are underdeveloped, certain plot points are underdeveloped, and so I'm glad to have seen it, and I was glad that I'd had a couple of like years between viewings. It's definitely not something that like you put on just for fun, right?
Yeah,
well, this would be a good like boys in 40s movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very intentional movie.
Yeah.
All right, good.
Yeah, I give it a strong 4. You know, I can definitely see why this movie means a lot to a lot of people. It's not quite like a 5 for me. Maybe someday, maybe as I get older and I age and life just beats me down and I revisit this. But yeah, you know, just appreciate the performances, the action, the story, just kind of everywhere it goes, and seeing how all these different actions and consequences like affect everybody throughout. And yeah, I mean, could have been trimmed down, could have had more character moments with certain characters, but overall just really, really glad I finally knocked this off the list. And I do want to shout out probably my favorite quote of the movie, but when Al Pacino is like, who, what are you, a fucking owl? It's so good. It's just so funny. Like it speaks to what you said about like him being just so awesome to hear swear. It's so funny.
Yeah. I can't really like qualify to you what makes somebody a great swearer, but Pacino, particularly as Tony Montana in Scarface, just, yeah, relishes in a cuss word, just delivers it. Like my dad is kind of like that. My dad is a prolific swearer and is really good at it. And you know, game recognized game, right? It's in my blood. I recognize it when Pacino does it too. So, all right, guys. Well, we'll be back sometime in January after a holiday break, and we'll do a kind of a wrap up of the year and see, you know, we'll do a top 5 movies. We'll kind of what did we do last year? Did we like do a reassessment? Did we like re-rank movies, or do we just say what our top 5 of the year was?
I think since we had our mid-year reassessment, I think we should do
right,
like,
okay,
mid-year reassessment,
then okay, can, that's what we did.
And then like with that in retrospect, we can then like do a top 5 kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Also, yeah, I think that sounds good.
Just on a slightly different note, I do just want to do like a little in memoriam session. We lost Rob Reiner, director of Spinal Tap,
among, yes, of course,
many other things. this past week. So I just wanted to give him a special shout out.
Shout out.
In peace.
And his wife.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Horrible.
Yes. Yeah, really, really tragic bit. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the details of the case come out and know exactly. I mean, I think we know what happened, but, you know, like, you know, to know more about it.
Yeah, sad it happened at all.
Yeah, and let's see, we've done at least one of his movies on the pod because we've done Spinal Tap, but I don't think we've done Princess Bride, which is like Grace's favorite movie. So yeah, shout out to him. We'll do more of him in the new year for
sure.
To kind of shout out Rob Reiner there.
Sounds good.
Although he did have a fairly prolific cameo in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, that's what I remember him for.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, we'll see you in the new year. We'll be back and do kind of an end of the year wrap up.
Sounds good.
All right. See you guys.
Later. Happy holidays.